This is Rachel Corrie's memorial, a celebration of her life. Born April 10th, 1979, and passing on March 16th, 2003. Stay with us for more coverage of Rachel Corrie's memorial. If you'd like, you can log on to www.evergreen.edu and click on the live streams, and you can see the procession live. The house is full at the CRC, and let's take it to there.
We are invited here today by the Corrie family to celebrate the life of an extraordinary young woman. The program is an expression of her life, as many of us knew her. In the last week, the family and the college have received hundreds of messages of condolence from all over the world. Reading these messages has made it clear to me that at a time when the nation is at war, the world is divided, and the future is uncertain for people all over the world, Rachel's loss has become a powerful symbol, spiritually, politically, and emotionally. Symbols are powerful things and important, but they are not people. Rachel's loss and Rachel's life were personal for so many of us because Rachel was a hometown girl. I first knew her as a sensitive, remarkably mature 10-year-old. When, as a parent, I traveled with my daughter Deborah's fifth grade class on a week-long field trip around the Olympic Peninsula. I remember Rachel's concern about the environment and the earth and her strong sense of equity. My old neighbor, John McGee, and I coached our daughters and Rachel in their Y basketball league. For 2 years, we coached them while in middle school. Rachel loved the team far more than she loved winning. And her joy in participating was infectious. One of my great joys on returning to Olympia as president of the Evergreen State College a few years ago was running into Rachel one day on campus and meeting this beautiful, active, committed young woman. When I spoke to my daughter Deborah, who was away studying in Mexico, and told her of Rachel's death, she cried and she said, "Dad, go to my closet. There's a box with all of my option stuff." I don't know where she got her organization because me and Jane don't have it. I go to the box and I find an album, and Deborah says, "Rachel was the greatest poet ever, Dad. Find her poem and read it for me." Rachel at 11 wrote a poem called "Last April." Last April came about rather slowly. She tiptoed on moss like winds in the trees. We had almost missed her wholly when the trees began to toss in the Aprilish breeze. Last April stayed on with maidenly grace. In the places she left not a trace of her barefoot chamomile tea, of her pleasant scent of the sea. Last April departed with impossible ease. She tiptoed on moss like wind in the trees. She reached out her hand to May coming grand and slipped through my fingers like glistening sand. Rachel's parents, Craig and Cindy Corey and the Corey family, have created a program that will celebrate this extraordinary woman's life. For all of us that love her in this community, let's celebrate. I would like to introduce a friend of the Corey family, Sam Herring.
When we are struck by tragedy, our natural human response is to seek comfort for our grief and support within our community, to make sense and meaning of our loss, and to reflect on how our loss might transform our lives and nurture our humanity. Our religious traditions provide guidance and solace for many of us during these times. Three of our great traditions are connected as branches of a single root: Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. These faith traditions share not only a common ancestor in Abraham and a belief in the same God, but also a common vision of peace built on a foundation of faith, love, and justice. In the spirit of Rachel's vision of a diverse world united together in peace, it is my privilege to introduce three members of our faith community to offer their prayers. Assistant Imam Jamal Diab from the Islamic Society of Olympia will offer a prayer from the Quran. Gene Robbins, Rachel's uncle, will offer a prayer from the Jewish tradition. The Reverend Dr. John Van Enwick, priest associate at St. Benedict's Episcopal Church and clinical director of the International Trauma Treatment Project, will offer a prayer from the Christian tradition.
Good afternoon. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وتحبون المال حبا جما كلا إذا دكت الأرض دكا دكا وجاء ربك والملك صفا صفا وجيء يومئذ بجهنم كلا إذا دكت الأرض دكا دكا وجاء ربك والملك صفا صفا وجيء يومئذ بجهنم يومئذ يتذكر الإنسان وأنى له الذكرى يقول يا ليتني قدمت لحياتي فيومئذ لا يعذب عذابه أحد ولا يوثق وثاقه أحد يا أيتها النفس المطمئنة ارجعي إلى ربك راضية مرضية فادخلي في عبادي وادخلي جنتي صدق الله العظيم.
Brothers and sisters, the verses I have just read for you from the Quran, they're about the soul when it leaves the body and what happened to it, and the peacefulness that it feels, and the tranquility. But that peace and tranquility has a condition for it. The condition is your deed on this earth. Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, says that when someone dies and his soul leaves, three things follow him. his wealth, his family, and his deeds. His wealth says, I'm going to stay here in the house. I'm not going to go anywhere. You go on your own. So when you die, you can't take your BMW with you. And you can't take your couch or your TV or anything. And your family will say, we'll go with you to the graveyard, and that's about it. We'll leave you there and we'll go back home. So the only thing goes with you down there is your deeds. And if your deeds are good, then they're going to stick with you, and they're going to stand with you in the front of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, before God. And they'll defend you on that day, on a judgment day. And we all know what Rachel's deeds are. She paid her life for it. So Rachel, I know you're watching us now. I know you're with us now. So I just want you to know that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses your soul. And I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to bless her family, the womb that cared her for 9 months and brought us such a fine woman. I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, I ask God to bless us all to stand for justice and peace. Thank you very much.
This is a peace prayer that Rabbi Mark Sharinsky chose especially for this day. It was written by Rabbi Nachman of Bratislav 200 years ago, and it includes a line from the Bible. Yehi ratzon milfa nicha shetatel milchamot vishvichut damim min ha'olam v'tamshich shalom gadol vanisla ba'olam v'lo yisa od oy el goy cherev v'lo yilmandu od milchama. Be it thy will to annul wars and the shedding of blood from the universe, and to extend a peace great and wondrous in the universe. Not again shall one people raise the sword against another, and they shall learn war no more. But let all the residents of earth recognize and know the innermost truth, that we are not come into this world for quarrel and division, nor for hate and jealousy, contrariness and bloodshed, but we are come into this world to recognize and know that which is divine, and to bless and honor that which is divine in our words and our actions. Amen.
Let us pray. Dear God, Creator, Redeemer, and Sanctifier of the universe, our beloved Rachel, sister, daughter, and friend, is no longer with us. We wonder if the human race will ever stop killing itself. Will our tears never end? We ask you to be with us in the emptiness of our despair. Help us to find our place in your creation. Help us to understand the oneness of us all. Join us together as instruments of your peace. Redeem us from the desire for vengeance. Redeem us from wanting to crush those who challenge our presumptions. Redeem us from seeing only in others what we need to see in ourselves. Sanctify our efforts to heal the brokenness of humanity. Sanctify our commitment to freedom and justice for all creation. Sanctify our prayers for those who have no one to pray for them. Remember those who mourn, whose hearts are broken, who feel forgotten or lost in eternity. Help us to be a comfort to them, to Rachel's family, and to her friends. When it is time, bring us together with Rachel and all your saints in your eternal love. Creator, Redeemer, and Sanctifier, to you we offer our prayer. Amen.
You are listening to the memorial services here at Evergreen State College, a celebration of Rachel Corey's life.
This is to honor Rachel, but also to honor the mother by a poem by Mahmoud Darwish, Palestinian poet. It's called "The Most Beautiful Mother is the One That Awaits Her Child to Return Home, but She Doesn't Come Home." The mother cries two tears and one rose, and refuses to put on her mourning dress. She goes to the doorstep to watch a lonely star in the dark skies.
Good afternoon. My name is Butch Engstrom. Our family and the Corey family have really been one family, one large, expanded family for well over 25 years. We've shared our homes and we've shared our children. We've shared in our joys and in our sorrows. I'd like to introduce today the newest member of our family. Please meet my grandson, Maxfield Parrish Wilson. Now, Max didn't have the opportunity to meet Rachel, but we've been telling him about her, and I think he understands. We know that Rachel saw pictures of Max. Well, someday, Max is going to go off to school, and in that school, they're going to talk about people. They're going to talk about people who made a difference in the world. And I believe that one of these people will be Rachel Corey. Max is going to go home after school. He's going to go to his mom, Siri. And he's going to say, Mommy, please tell me a story about Rachel Corey.
I will have many stories about Rachel to tell my son, Max. Many of them involving being tied up in the barn by Rachel's older brother, Chris, or having jellyfish fights down by the stream. Rachel had such a big heart for people as well as animals. In fact, at times, her house looked a lot like the procession of the species. There were dogs, there were cats, there were chickens and fish, lizards, ducks, birds, and a turtle. Pets, some of whom I promise you, few people but Rachel could have loved. Rachel loved so many people and was loved by just as many. Foremost among them, my sister Bridget, who when she was little and couldn't bear to be separated from her mom, would still go spend the night at Rachel's. And then in the middle of the night, when the phone would ring at our house and Bridget said she needed to come home, Rachel always understood. Max, I hope you're so lucky someday to find a friend as special as Rachel, who will always take care of you. And I'll tell Max that his Nana also has many stories to tell him.
I will tell my grandson, Max, that once upon a time, many years ago, I was there the day that Rachel was born. And your Aunt Bridget and I took her a birthday cake, and we celebrated this wonderful day. From that time on, I was able to be present when she said her first words, began to walk, started school, learned to ride a bike, and I helped her learn to drive a car. When she was a little girl, I watched many plays performed in our living rooms that Rachel wrote, directed, and usually start in. In a similar vein, I went through innumerable haunted houses erected in the barn. Rachel was as much a part of my family as my own two children. I wish I could tell you the story of one moment that stands out in my mind, but there are 23 years worth to sort through. We celebrated so many joyful events over the years, and I saw her grow into a confident, determined young woman who wanted to make a difference in people's lives. Rachel's absence will always be felt in our family, but I know her courage will continue to inspire Max. I will also tell Max that your Aunt Bridget has the most stories to tell about Rachel.
And I have a very special friend with me, Dusty Bear. I will tell my nephew Max that dressed in nothing but a swimsuit and bare feet, Rachel and I, no more than five, made our way through the brambles to the creek in the back of the Corey's house. From mud fights to seaweed fashion shows, the times we spent down there are cherished memories. I can remember the time when Rachel and I decided to do some cooking. The two of us went to the kitchen and dragged everything out from mayonnaise to blackberries out of the cupboards and fridge and poured and stirred this concoction, baked it for an hour, and served up a big bowl. So horrible the dog wouldn't even eat it. From haunted houses in the barn to riding our pet sleeping bags down the stairs, we named Pickle and California Rider. Rachel had the ability to turn any rainy day into an adventure. I know, speaking for my family and probably a lot of you out there, Rachel was the kind of person who stepped into your life and left a footprint behind. She had goals and ambitions, and nothing would stand in her way. And I know deep down in my heart that wherever she has moved on to, she is making a difference, creating peace and happiness in the lives of people she touches. This is a poem Rachel wrote for me in high school entitled Flowers. A pane of flowers grow together. One is soft, delicately beautiful, bending or dew-streaked blossoms. The other is jubilant, sparkling, facing the gentle sunlight. They are odd there together, mismatched, yet they grow up, intertwining stems, sheltering each other, reaching together toward the sun. It is cold in the leafy shadows, where the soil parts, to let two stems creep out, but beyond those first 2 inches, the stalks wave together and tangle. They seem to share a stem. It is as if these glittering emerald stems, two life sources, grew together. Together they reach the air and sunlight. Together they are warm. For my friend Bridget, with whom I share the flowers, friendship.
You are listening to the memorial services of Rachel Corey here at KAOS 89.3 FM.
My name is Michael Dempster. I'm standing up here with a group of my colleagues who were Rachel's elementary school teachers. And two who are not up here with us today are Roxanne McPherson and Jackie Walter. In the early 80s, Craig and Cindy Corey were at the core of a group of determined and dedicated people, which included the Engstroms, who tirelessly petitioned the Olympia School District to create an alternative elementary school program. Their years of hard work paid off in the launching of the Options Alternative Program, which is now housed at Lincoln Elementary School. I've taught in this program for 16 years, and I'm very grateful that they made this opportunity a possibility, made it a reality. And all of us here are the, all of us teachers here are the beneficiaries of their hard work and dedication and vision. As are thousands of children who have gone through the program since then. We are all grateful to them and their co-conspirators in putting options together. And these students are around us. Many of you are here, I'm sure, and we're also spread, many of them are spread far and wide around the world.
I'm Barbara Weaver, and Donna and I were Rachel's teachers in first and second grade. And when I think about Rachel as a young learner, I see images of this joyful yet serious student who loved to learn. As a first and second grader, she was exuberant, sometimes silly, sometimes impish, but always excited about learning. At the end of her first day of school, she was beaming and came up to me and looked at me and said, "That was the best first day of school I've ever had." If you know her smile, if you saw all of the pictures on the screen, you also might know her serious look. Her eyebrows coming together and her presence changing when she got serious. I can see her still sitting at our discussion circles, cross-legged on the floor, either sitting up straight with her hands in her lap or leaning back on her arms because she never slouched. She had her serious face on, and as we were discussing, Rachel, as a first and second grader, asked big questions. She asked a lot of why questions. Why would that be? Why would that happen? What would happen if we did that?
Along with her joy of learning, she brought with her an awareness and deep concern for fairness and justice, which she would share in a forthcoming manner. Imagine this six-year-old coming up to me, her first grade teacher, with her riveting presence, looking me square in the eye, saying, "Donna, did you know that at recess?" And then she would proceed to explain, from her kid's point of view, what injustice was going on the playground or in the classroom. And I would look down at her precious, determined face and think, this is a person who not only expects to be heard, but she is holding us teachers accountable to take action and to set things right.
I was Rachel's third grade teacher. I last saw Rachel at the end of January when she came to Lincoln to talk to a group of students about her upcoming trip to the Middle East. It was great to see her. I was happy to see, as this group of us was looking over documents from those early days of the options program, that Rachel had said that her favorite topic that she studied at elementary school was the same as one of mine, and that is the study of the solar system and outer space.
Hi, I'm Jody Bernstein, and I was Rachel's fifth grade teacher. We shared an extraordinary year. It was my last year of teaching and her last year of elementary school, and we did the field trip that Lester referred to earlier all around the Olympic Peninsula for a week. And when I reflect about that year, Rachel's face surfaces often in my memories. We had an instant affinity because we shared some of the same passions. We both shared a passion for art and for poetry and for social activism. The big project that year was a press conference that was about the state of the world's children, and we prepared for months. I see a lot of faces in the crowd of other kids that were part of that. It was a big deal. We had press and government officials. We were at the state capitol, and we prepared speeches, and all of the kids that participated were passionate and dedicated to speaking for the world's children. And then when Rachel came up to the podium, it was a different thing. You could see that this issue was her soul's work. And later on in the program, you'll get to see a videotape of her giving her speech that day. At the end of the year, in her fifth grade yearbook, Rachel wrote about what her ambitions were for her life, and we'll share those with you. Listen. I want to be a lawyer.
A dancer.
An artist.
An actress.
A mother.
A wife.
A children's author.
A distance runner.
A poet.
A pianist.
A pet store owner.
An astronaut.
An environmental and humanitarian activist.
A psychiatrist.
A ballet teacher.
And the first woman president. As you can see, this exuberant, fun-loving learner with an innate sense of wonder, this person committed to fairness, this young activist, this fairy princess poet, has a magic of her own.
What do we do? Help! Help!
Oh, it's help! No use screaming. There's nobody to hear you. Help! Help! Somebody help us! It's snowing!
You are listening to Rachel Corey's memorial services held here at the Evergreen State College and simulcast at KAOS 89.3 FM. For a live audio stream, log on to www.evergreen.edu.
She came to our school and talked to several classes. She talked about the conflict and especially about the children. She said children in Palestine need hope. They need to know someone out in the world knows about them and cares.
Rachel
Corey's
memorial.
For Rachel, from her very dear friend, Jody Henderson. High school is a trying time for most people. For everyone, high school is a time of soul searching. It's a time when you challenge what you've been taught and try to discover for yourself who you are. It is a time to start deciding what kind of world you want to live in. The world is safe, it seems, if you stay in a bubble that you create, ignoring the world that you do not see. It was never Rachel's way to form a bubble or to accept the easy world. We had a chance to travel to Russia together. What an opportunity for the five of us soul-searching kids from Capitol High School. I think that during this trip, Rachel found her soul more than she ever had through music or dance, or more than she had through her writing. She saw things that she loved in Russia, a country with so much culture and love. It was the troubled side of the country that captivated her. The economic and political problems that she saw sparked the activist in Rachel. She was very affected by the people she met whose quality of life was hard. It was obvious that the amount of work and time that her contacts in Russia put out still often led to disappointing results. We wrote articles for the Olympian, and Rachel's article ended by saying that Olympia had her heart, but her soul belonged to Russia. From that time on, her soul belonged not to Russia specifically, but to all people who needed help. She was the happiest when she was traveling to other countries, trying to affect change and letting her voice be heard. That voice is one of the things that I most admire about Rachel. Her singing voice, her political voice, and her voice on paper. She is one of those people who could pick up a pen and write for hours, creating stories and characters that jumped off the page with every word. She sometimes wrote me poems when I was having hard times, and sometimes just because she felt like writing. She had a way with words unlike anyone else I know. One of my favorite memories of Rachel is after a soccer practice one day in high school. She made up songs and dances for her friends when we were walking back from the fields because we had time to spare. I can picture her interpretive dance and silly rhyming songs and Rachel spinning in circles making us all laugh. She had a talent for music and dance. She knew it, but I think she had gotten to the point in both where someone else wants it more you to succeed than you yourself. It was always refreshing to see her dancing for herself or hear her singing for herself. The vibrance of Rachel, the performer, came back and you could see that she was happy. Just a kid born for the camera. All of her worries washed away. Always one to play in the mud, run around in the rain, skip a class to have coffee with a friend. Always one to see a friend in need and do all she could to help. Rachel was one to grab life by the horns. Remember her for her playfulness, her complexity, and her voice. Read some of what she has written if you have a chance. She accomplished so much in her 23 years. From all of your friends, West Side Co-op to Evergreen, thanks, Rachel, for all that you gave us. We will miss you.
I'm Gail Merkel, one of her high school teachers. It is my honor to speak today as one of Rachel's teachers. And in addition to my reminiscences, I want to share some thoughts of Matt Grant, Rachel's U.S. history teacher. And I quote, "She taught me more than I taught her. She was inspiring. I could always count on her to make my class instruction better." When Matt recalls her writing, he says, "Anything she submitted was passionate, interesting, well-supported, extremely readable, and sometimes purely poetic. Rachel made class time exciting. I'd often ask students to role-play historical situations, and Rachel always threw herself into it, heart and soul. I remember once asking the students to take on characteristics of an immigrant to the United States, and Rachel played the role complete with accent and life experiences she had researched. Her abilities raised the bar for the rest of the class." Matt goes on to say, one other quality he appreciated was her ability to make others better people. Rachel reawakened Matt's interest in history and reaffirmed his commitment to teaching. To conclude Matt's thoughts, he says, "I'd like to use the words of E.B. White when he wrote of the immortal gray spider in the last line of Charlotte's Web. She was in a class by herself." It is not often, Matt says, that someone comes along who is a true friend and a gifted writer. Rachel was both. Now, when I consider Rachel's impact on me, the first phrase that occurs and has been reoccurring in all of these speeches is one destined to make a difference. In my relationship with Rachel as her teacher and friend, beginning her junior year of high school in AP English, there was a mutual respect for the written word. She was the creator, I was the editor, and as a good listener, I was a sounding board for Rachel. She had so many ideas, so many questions. It was stimulating to hear her contributions in seminar.
Discussing societal values and beliefs through the literary works we studied gave all of us the opportunity to explore what is most significant. Rachel couldn't be bothered by little things like turning in all of her assignments because she was already dealing with the big issues, splashing in a puddle on the way to class, and then writing poetry that was so clear, so poignant, and so articulate. One wondered but didn't question how this complex young woman had so much to contribute. A portion of a poem by Ben Jonson captures Rachel's qualities. A lily of a day is fairer far in May. Although it fall and die that night, it was the plant and flower of light. In small proportions we just beauty see, and in short measures life may perfect be. I care about Rachel's mission and her desire to see a wrong and work to correct it, but in a selfish way, I want her still here so I can be the recipient of one of her impish smiles and her insightful, powerful poems. Thank you, Rachel, for making such an impact on my life.
My name is Lynn Nelson. I teach here at Evergreen. Many people have worked with Rachel, many people have learned with Rachel, and we would like to invite the teachers and the staff who've worked with her and known her the last few years to rise and join us as we stand up here. If you do that, those who've worked with her here. From the Advising Center, the Labor Center, the teachers who worked with her. Each of us are going to share a few thoughts. Rachel has been a very strong and steady presence for many of us. For those of us who've gotten to know her over the past few years, and those of us who've known her since she was a little girl, when she took pleasure in the streams of Puget Sound, when she started to ask herself what it takes to find courage, and when she began her life as a writer. Many of us here at Evergreen worked with Rachel last year when she was involved in a year-long academic program called Local Knowledge. In the beginning, she was quiet, an intense observer, a passionate witness who saw deeply into the possibilities. I first got to know Rachel through her writings, writings which put me on high alert, that kept me up late at night with their intensity, beauty, determination, and humor. Rachel was searching, always searching, and open to the unexpected. She appreciated things that were not always apparent to others. She cared very much about other students, and they became devoted friends. With them, she helped to make things possible. Rachel was studious and poetic in how she learned about and shared her sense of local history. If she were here right now, she might try to convince you to read some little-known piece of homegrown writing by a local author. She might tell you that she had very different ideas from that author, but that she learned a lot, it provoked her, it helped her make connections, that it made her think deeply about her community and other communities who are desperately trying to keep their history alive and write their future. In June of last year, Rachel wrote the following: "Studying the history of this area roots me. It makes me more conscious of myself and of people around me as actors in history. We are startled to discover that the places we live in are important." She also wrote, "History is motivating. We've certainly waded in the same water and wandered on the same beaches as very brave people. It makes bravery seem possible." Many weeks ago, she wrote to us that the children of Palestine could not go to the beach. There was bravery in Rachel as she walked those children to their school. Again, June of last year, Rachel wrote the following about her sense of place here in Olympia. "I look at this place now and I just want to do right by it. The salmon beneath downtown and the people who can't come to drop-in groups, the creeks, the inlets, the people who were here first, my elementary school teachers and my mom. No overwhelming desire to escape, no dissociation into factoids and trivia, certainly no bored invention of mythologies to pass the time. 2 months ago, Rachel left this place, which she embraced with both care and impatience, and she went to another place that she'd been carefully learning about to make the community-to-community connections that she valued so much and she was so good at. As Rachel said, she just wanted to do right by it.
I'm Ann Fischel, and I was Lynn's co-teacher in local knowledge. A primary value of my faith tradition, Judaism, is what we call tikkun olam, repairing the broken world. We are living in a dark time when the world feels broken and wounded. I think especially of the bombs which are falling right now on Iraq, killing thousands of innocent people and poisoning the water, land, and people. I think of the desperation of Palestinians and Israelis locked in a conflict that seems to have no solution. Our program, Local Knowledge, began just after 9/11 and a week before the war began on Afghanistan. The realities of global conflict crashed in on a class learning to work in small-scale local settings. As a class, we struggled to respond to this challenge. Rachel was one of our students who worked intensely to connect local history, experience, and activism with the crisis of war. Rachel was learning to repair and heal the world. It was not an easy process. Like many students, she doubted herself, made mistakes, procrastinated, and as other people have said, missed deadlines. Sometimes I would get a phone message, "Ann, I've been hiding out from you because I haven't finished my paper." Then the paper would arrive weeks late, and it would be beautifully written, well-researched, filled with insight and feeling. She was sometimes reluctant to speak in front of groups and sometimes unsure of her abilities. She was a gentle person with a fierce determination to learn, teach, organize, build community, and work for justice. Part of Rachel's vision of community was her ability to seek connections. She envisioned broad coalitions of people working together. Her spring quarter project of last year, to create the Peace Doves with many other people, was just like that, no slogans, just people of varying ages and politics working together to express their hunger for peace. She refused separation, refused to chop up the world into issues and communities that would have not seemed to have nothing to do with each other. She wrote, "We live in a curious geography where we have instantaneous access to products and information from anywhere on Earth. Yet we are separated from the consequences of our actions by thousands of miles, strings of subcontracts, trash compactors, and a long parade of dispensers and ATM machines, which cause objects to appear as if from thin air." Rachel was determined to understand where products and information came from and the impact of public policy on peoples and communities. She wrote about her connection to this region, to its waterways and wildlife, its history and people. She wrote about, quote, "trying to understand history as something situated firmly in the streets, all down the inlets and amongst the trees." She wrote about labor struggles and people who had fought against racism, economic disenfranchisement, and war. She supported the work of the Labor Center on our campus. She wrote about her passionate connection with the marginalized and oppressed. And because of that connection, she learned Arabic and went to Gaza to work with the people of Rafah, and wrote letter after passionate letter to her community here in Olympia so that we would know, care, and support her community there in Palestine. I believe Rachel went not just to stand in front of bulldozers, although she certainly did that and expected to do that. She went to engage with Palestinian people, to live her connection with them. She lived in people's homes, ate their food, played with their kids, and set about developing relationships between Rafah and Olympia. She was arranging pen pal relationships between local kids and kids in Rafah. She worked with women's groups to bring crafts to our local fair trade store. She wanted Olympia and Rafa to become sister cities. And in another paper, she wrote, "War and racism and injustice are not..." In February, when millions of people marched in the streets to show their opposition to war in Iraq, she marched in a demonstration in Rafah with a sign that said, "Olympia says no war on Iraq or Palestine." She wrote, "War and racism and injustice are not outside of us. It's important that human rights and resistance to oppression be included in the way we define ourselves as a community." It's clear in Rachel's emails from Rafah that the margin of safety gained through her identity as a white American was slipping away. The bulldozers got more aggressive. Soldiers fired on her and others as they repaired one of the main wells. The U.S. Embassy offered no protection or support. But Rachel was living her life in connection with, in profound engagement with, the people of Rafah, and she was not willing to be separated from them or from what she had gained and learned from them. This is community in the most profound sense. I invite us to celebrate Rachel's life and work by continuing to learn and act on what we know. She would want us to take care of each other and keep working for Tikkun Olam, for a world that's whole and just. She would want us to keep building a community that takes responsibility for the lives of everyone, no matter how distant, that makes things together, the way 40 people made doves for the procession of the species, that nurtures children, that supports activism, that fights oppression, that understands where its food comes from and where the salmon run, and how to make peace, not war.
Much has been said in the past week and today about Rachel Corey as a young child, an artist, and a college student. She excelled at all these things. At Evergreen, two of the major goals of education are personal engagement and linking theory and practice. Rachel excelled at these also. She was not content to merely learn about injustice in the world, but also needed to do something about it. This was true locally, where she would counsel low-income people, work to save the labor center at the college, or connect art and peace in the procession of the species. Rachel and I worked very closely together in the Olympia Movement for Justice and Peace, the OMJP. As many people have said this week, she was the heart and soul of the Olympia Movement. She was also one of its hardest workers and smartest participants. She has been described as one who brings people together, and she certainly did. But it was more than just a local residence. She also brought people together through time and space. One example, on September 11th, 2002, on the anniversary of 9/11, OMJP sponsored an all-day vigil in remembrance for the victims of New York and the subsequent victims in Afghanistan. Rachel was in charge and did a great deal of work. She arrived before 6 a.m. and stayed until all the work was done at 10 p.m. She set up a mural art project where people could write their feelings and create art. She had arranged for some classes from Lincoln Options Elementary School to attend, and many children wrote and drew pictures on the mural project, including many children who are here today. Rachel not only had a profound impact on me, a 53-year-old teacher, she also had a profound impact on the lives of eight and nine-year-old students. I have no doubt that in the year 2060, some of the children who have been influenced by Rachel in the past years will be telling their grandchildren that they were proud to have known Rachel and that she was one of the inspirations that led them to lead a life for social justice. Rachel's heart and soul lives on. Thank you, Rachel.
As faculty of Middle East Studies and a community activist, I had the privilege of working with Rachel on a range of issues. I first met her when she organized a panel on women, war, and militarization in the community. And I worked with her. She was a tireless worker on issues that are very close to my heart, Iraq, the situation in Iraq, and in Palestine. This poem, I'd like to read a poem written by Lisa Suher Mejej, who's a Palestinian-American poet and a dear friend of mine and also a friend of Anne Fischel's. It expresses a kind of collective gratitude that Palestinians feel towards Rachel in her quiet courage in defense of the voiceless Palestinians of the Gazan refugee camps. It also captures the grief that Palestinians, other Arabs, and many of us here in the community who have been doing solid Palestinian solidarity work and working for peace and justice share with her family. Whatever words might have been adequate have become a high fluting cry, like the keening with too-too of the unseen bird outside my window. All day I have been trying to break free from the bulldozer's blade, piled earth, steel treads, fracturing skull and chest, that moment of resistance and protest, stilled frame reverberating beyond the moment. Like the kid in Tiananmen Square before the tank, her bright orange jacket and megaphone, her kind and tired eyes. All day I have been pierced by the high note of helplessness, the ragged beat of despair, shrouded body with its blur of blood, the quiet hands of mourners bearing her flag sheathed across the town. And why was she there? Ask the one whose truth she saw and sought to speak. Ask the child sitting atop slanting slabs of concrete, debris of his demolished home. Ask the husband of the pregnant woman trapped beneath crushing rubble, the neighbor's bulldozed house bringing their walls down, who cradled her toddler as she died. Ask the families, hundreds huddled in wind-ripped tents, homes wrecked without warning to make way for the separation wall. Ask the ones who aren't American and don't make the morning news. Whatever words we have are useless against this cruel weight. The bird's cry keens from every crack in the edifice of history. Before she died, Rachel Corey wrote of the privilege granted her, an outsider denied to those under occupation. I have a home. I am allowed to go see the ocean. Thank you.
Going to do my absolute best to not speak too quickly. So maybe, Sarah, if I speak too quickly, you can let me know. Before I start, I would like to also ask all the students, both past and present, who have worked with Rachel to stand for acknowledgement. Join us on stage if you would like, sit if you must. We have many words to share. Our writings are fairly long. For those of you who weren't able to share your words with us, we apologize. We hope that our words do justice to your experiences that you had working with her throughout the years. We were fortunate enough to have her for the last two. I know many of you had much more. We don't know enough about Rachel's life to try and encapsulate it in an anecdote. She's a living memory to us as friends, and we have many things to share and many discoveries about ourselves and the kind of society we live in yet to experience. In the midst of our confusion as a nation, our violence, and the price of our complacency, we are reminded of the lessons we shared and poked and prodded with Rachel. So many words and ideas, so many acts and attempts at discovering our own ability to act and collaborate and build and discuss. It's hard to see Rachel's face in the lights. It's hard to allow oneself to feel and remember in front of the cameras in this place. To see and really understand the frenzy and shamelessness of what could be journalism. but can't or won't ask the real questions. The very same media Rachel deplored, questioned, and critically analyzed is painting a picture of her for the world to view. We can only hope that the public will be as critical of her life and death as they are of the politics, communities, and ethics she embodied and embraced. To her family, all we can do is thank you for your part in nurturing this truly human person. Her smell, her smile, her style, her lunchbox and bag of ideas, her willingness to see and get it. The little girl who proclaimed in elementary school that she wanted to be a humanitarian and environmental activist and was determined to become the first woman president of the United States. When asked what her favorite books were, she listed 15 to 20 titles, unable to select just one. This never changed, as she was a prolific learner and compassionate seeker of knowledge and understanding. By the time Rachel arrived in our academic doorsteps, she was transitioning from a place of uncertainty to a place of self-actualization. Perhaps you didn't all know her personally, yet are very touched and angered by what you have seen in such horrible detail. Learn and speak. Turn to each other and organize right where your community needs it most. This is how to honor the humility of this person's death, not with banners and songs and slogans, but with strength, intelligence, and critical compassion. We all know there are some of this left out there somewhere. Rachel was one of the few Ole kids that gets to come to this school and was connected to the town, its coffee shops, its bars, its bookstores, its festivals, its peoples. Those of us who studied and learned with Rachel's were privileged to engage in sometimes frustrating, empowering, and oftentimes impossible dialogues, including such topics as racial equality, economic justice, labor rights, the health of the planet, and the victims of our wars and the wars we finance. She studied all these areas with what some might call pathological ambition, some uncanny organizational, okay, sometimes pain in the ass motivational skills, and the ability to see a need and create the conditions for its improvement. Rachel's academic prowess and community experiences were largely informed by her sense of location and sense of home. In all of her work, she brought her roots, practicality, and values into the foreground, challenging those who lacked a sense of community to create and revel in a self-constructed and self-determined support network. She believed in creating little families of folk everywhere she went. It was impossible to work with her and not feel her family, her friends, her experiences, and her insights. It was impossible to sit idly by and not become consumed by the cyclone of urgency and passion that accompanied Rachel's insane process. Last spring, Rachel envisioned a flock of doves participating in the procession of the species, an annual parade celebrating the threatened natural world. Common memories include feathers flying in the air, plaster stuck all over the damn place, nicotine withdrawal, as she decided to stop smoking right beforehand, which kind of pained all of us, supplemented by caffeine overdoses, Rachel's blonde hair greasy and nasty from weeks of neglect, menacing motivations and urgent phone calls reminding us that there was still time to participate, down to the last few hours. Watching droves of common people streaming in and out of the studio, building and envisioning doves was remarkable. Everyone who was involved with the process was impacted by the tactful reign of our beloved Dove Tater. That's for you, Colin. This is where so many of us truly got to see the brilliance and energy of our peer. Yet she still doubted the importance of this work, stating, "I think peace doves and cranes will happen again next year, and they will be because we're all coordinating it, and hopefully they'll be a procession institution." It's a community-building opportunity for people who do peace work. It's intergenerational. It gives people in the Evergreen community a chance to do work with people in the broader progressive community. I think it's important for people who oppose war and repression to speak about who we are as a community, in addition to speaking about war and racism and injustice. We are not outside. I think it's important that human rights and resistance to oppression be included in the way we define ourselves as a community. Paulo Freire stated in The Pedagogy of the Oppressed, "To surmount the situation of oppression, people must first critically recognize its causes so that through transforming action, they can create a new situation, one that makes possible the pursuit of a fuller humanity." In the pursuit of a fuller humanity, it is essential to recognize Rachel as a multidimensional, flawed, sometimes dirty freak of a kid that we all love and will miss as a friend, companion, and challenge. We do not wish to leave her in the hands of those destined to make her into a symbol, positive or negative. She is not an object that can be molded into another's periphery. She is not propaganda for anyone to exploit. She isn't a cause of the week or the next best news story. She is and will always be an inspiration to the world for her courage, bravery, and fear. She touched us long before all this happened. She will continue to touch us now. There was more to Rachel than that fateful day in Rafah, thousands of miles away from her home. There is more to her than any one individual will ever know. It's not every day we meet someone in the public eye that embodies something so extraordinary and so common. so extraordinary and so underreported and estimated by the media. There was a greatness in Rachel that could, can and should inspire the greatness in all of us. If our collective memory of Rachel ends with admiration, then her message is lost to us. Rachel recognized the dangers associated with her presence in Rafah. She was consciously aware of the possibility of death, and although had more reasons to believe that she would be protected by her U.S. citizenship. Although she was aware that she might not return to see the salmon spawn in Kennedy Creek, she needed to stand side by side with the people of Rafah and fight for the rights of the poor and oppressed in Palestine. She had to defend those denied a voice and did her best to provide a voice for them to the world. She did this through making every person in her life accountable for their privilege. She loyally sent email correspondences that stirred all fortunate enough to receive them and transformed us into participants in a conflict that could easily reflect the distant and superficial perspectives of our media and government. Many believe that Rachel sided completely and naively with the Palestinian government. It is very important to note that Rachel Corrie didn't support any government or systemic structure that denied the needs of those most needy and benefited those most privileged. The brilliance of Rachel was that she was willing to allow herself to be transformed by her own experiences and those of others around her. She was willing to sacrifice everything she had been taught by popular culture to cherish: comfort, blind faith, complacency, and to elevate herself to a place of transformation and compassion. She died, but we still have each other, the impact of her presence and commitment, the lessons we shared, and so much to do, work to do. If the death of this person and the bombs we drop on the impoverished collateral of the world doesn't instill with you a sense of urgency, look further. With each act of aggression and each shameless commodification of emotion and culture, the farther we must travel in our search for balance and the meaning of our own humanity. The following are directly from a piece that Rachel wrote for all of us. Studying the history of this area roots me. It makes me more conscious of the land and more conscious of myself and of the people around me as actors in history. Studying local history is motivating. We've certainly waded in the same water and wandered on the same beaches as very brave people. It makes bravery seem more possible, something that can occur on the forest roads and around the Skokomish. In the summer, the rushes grow so tall you can hide in them and be completely invisible. This is where I came from. Tunnels through rushes. I could spend all the light hours of all the days in tunnels through rushes in the middle of the estuary at the mouth of Perry Creek. This is where I came from, and this is where I would have liked to stay. Sunburned and hidden and close to water, making up whole pretend histories about shipwrecks and Swiss Family Robinson. At some point, signs went up in the middle of my estuary. Two red metal signs. Once I peeked out of the reeds and saw a kid I went to middle school with walking up one of the channels of the rocks. I slithered away through the reeds like a snake. These are the ways the places cease to be utterly intimate, childishly private. I took care not to read those signs. To this day, I don't know whether they were warning signs about water quality or about the pipes buried beneath the stream or about public or about private property. The signs were uncomfortable company. I disliked them. They did not belong. It's difficult to relinquish our sureness of the places we live. It's difficult to look at warning signs, to seek out history, to confront the pieces that aren't idyllic. There's a lot in Olympia that wants to be idyllic in one way or another. There have been so many times over the last several years when I've wanted to be anywhere except Olympia. I think I'll be gone within the next year. It's hard to explain it, to explain me into it, to explain how many different ways there are to see it. Drawing links between historic repression, racism, propaganda campaigns, and xenophobia to our present situation has been very empowering to me. The brutal history drives home the importance of resistance, and it makes national and international events relevant on a local level. So much of this has happened before. We can look at the history and then choose which side we want to be on now and how willing we are to fight. Jeanette Winterson once asked, "Why is the measure of love loss?" I don't have the answer for this astute question. What I know is that Rachel Corrie's life, and now her death, have transformed my life forever. I will never be the same person I once was, and I thank her profusely for her contributions to all of us. Todd Skaggs, who was also in the program that we were in fall quarter, is going to read a poem that was written by Jill Hannay, who was a fellow peer and very much loved Rachel, and she's sending her love to all the family from Austin, Texas, but she simply couldn't get here. So.
Thank you.